I think I'm being watched.
Well, we are putting this out on Channel 9.
No, it's more like I'm being monitored.
Like KGB, CIA, GCHQ.
Yeah, that should get us some more traffic onto this show. But no, it's my devices. They're monitoring me.
Ah, that's because of the number of sensors has increased that we're carrying around with ourselves these days. And, cunningly, that's the subject of today's show. Sensors. Welcome to Context, a show about the right experience on the right device at the right time.
Roll the credits. Okay, so we're talking about sensors, and I suppose for me, I typically carry around a few devices. I carry around a PC, I carry around a phone, I also wear a Microsoft band. And I suppose the PC doesn't have a ton of sensors that are really gathering data about me, but certainly my phone has a ton of sensors in it, and my band has a ton of sensors in it.
Yeah, and there's been somewhat of an evolution around these things in the last few years. If I think back, GPS was, I suppose, the first sensor that we had access to, and we could start to customize experiences or customize displays based upon where we thought somebody was. But there's so much more that's now available and possible to do even just on your phone there.
Yeah, when I think about my phone, you know, when you look at the array of sensors in this device, there are times when it knows about more about the real world than I do. Obviously, sometimes it also knows less, but I think of some of the things. I have no idea what the current atmospheric pressure might be, for instance, but my phone's got an idea because it's got a barometer. I don't know about what sort of incline I'm on, but my phone has an inclinometer, so it's got some idea of that. It's got a compass, so it kind of knows where north might be. Of course, it's got GPS, so it knows about that too. So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in my phone with this dazzling array of sensors, where it potentially knows more about the environment perhaps than even I do on some specific areas.
Yeah. And then taking that to something like my band, where it knows probably more about me than I do. It knows my current body temperature, it knows my heart rate, it can infer things such as whether I'm awake or whether I'm asleep, whether I'm walking, running, and those sort of things. We're really seeing that there's a bit of an evolution when it comes to being aware of me as well as my environment. But I suppose there's two things really at play here, and that's one is, what does the user expect of the experience? As in, how can it be customized based upon what these sensors can supply to? Then number two, the developer, and how does the developer take advantage of these things and then customize the experience thereon?
Yeah, and I think there's really going to be an evolution in software here. And it really takes us back to the heart of what this show is all about. And the context theme is these sensors are providing a lot of that context into your software. So that, for instance, please don't display, let's say, a Twitter notification while I'm asleep, especially not with an audible sound, because I don't want that. And don't display a modal dialogue to me on a screen when I'm driving down the motorway in my car. That doesn't make any sense. And these sensors are the means to provide some of that context and sort of educate the piece of software as to what the user probably expects.
Yeah, that's right. But before we take a look at some code examples of this, let's take a look at what some of the people in the street are saying about sensors.
Yes.
Sometimes I do.
Not at all.
All the time.
Yes.
It would have a very boring life if it did.
Just a few trusted apps.
A few trusted apps.
Just a few trusted.
At least five.
Tens.
I'm going to guess.
More than 10.
Six.
10, 11.
More than I can count on hands and feet.
I think in the long run, yes.
Yes, as long as you keep it secure.
I would be wary about how it's used.
I think it's interesting, but it's a little uncomfortable. Yes.
Yes, I'm more comfortable with that.
I think you're going to have to anonymize some data.
Yes, but sometimes you need to have a personal data.
Yes.
I think it might, actually.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. Definitely.
Yes.
I know it knows more than about my lifestyle. No, I don't think I would.
Yes.
Not at this point in time, no.
Onto my body, yes. Into my body, I would have to think about it.
Okay, so let's begin with some fairly simple stuff. Let's start with the basics of location. And what I've got here is just a Windows 10 universal Windows application, not bringing in any additional SDKs. We'll look at the code in a minute. Let's run it first on the phone. I've got my phone here on the desk. I'm going to use the phone because it's got a better idea of my location than my PC. So let's just start deploying this down to the device in Visual Studio. Deploying down to the phone, and as soon as that comes to life, and we got that application down there, got that there, it just has this really simple user interface. It says locate me, and if I tap onto the button here and get it to locate me, you notice that it needs permission to locate me, which is a good thing. We'll come back to that in a second. And then if we just let that navigate across, you'll see that essentially we have drawn a map. We have put a push pin on this map. We are actually at Thames Valley Park, which is where Microsoft's headquarters are in Reading. And the street address below says Reading, also Reading, no city specified here, and RG61WG is the postcode here of the office. So it's pretty much found out where we are and it's drawn it on a map. Simple stuff. So let's go back over to Visual Studio. Let's stop debugging this, just have a quick look at the code that makes that happen. So again, this is a Windows 10 Universal Windows project. We haven't referenced any additional SDKs. It's just all in the UWP, this stuff. But what we have done is made sure in our application manifest here that we've got the capability, the permission to ask for the user's location. Now you notice that still, the first time we use the APIs, it still asks the user, and that's good. But if we hadn't ticked this box, the API would just fail. So it's a two-step process. You've got to say that you're going to ask for it, and then the framework will still ask for it. So, you know, we want the user in control of all of this stuff. Let's take a quick look at the code. When you click on that button on the screen, what happens is there is an event handler. We're just going to scroll quickly down to look at this. It's called on locate button click. I thought that was a good bit of naming on my part. I'm good with names. And you'll notice what it does is it says get the user's position. So let's hit F12 and jump to that function. And you'll see that what this does is first off, we're using the geolocator class. We have to request access, you can't just assume, and we're also checking that we get the access, and you should have logic in a real application for what to do if you don't get the access, but we assume that we get it. And then we create a geolocator and we say, get me the geo position. Where is the user? Let's find that. Now, if we jump back to the calling code, let's just jump back to where we were. So here comes back the position, we update the UI, we move the map to be the point which is the coordinate at the position that this previous call gave us. So we center our map around that point. We also draw a circle on the map at that point. You might have spotted that as well. And then the other bit we try to do is this idea of sort of geocoding, reverse geocoding, is figuring out from the lat and lon, what is the actual street address. And there's another API for that. So here we're making a call. Let's jump to that again with F12, and you'll see we're using map location finder. So this is just built into the UWP. We give it the point, and if it comes back successfully, it may come back with a number of locations, but we're just taking the first one. So we get the location, the information about that. If we jump back to the calling code again, you'll see that one of the things that we get from that is an address. And if I just hit an F12 to show you what an address looks like, you'll see that an address is a map address. And that has, oh, look at all that data. It might even include things like building names, continents, and so on. And you can probably imagine how I data bind that on the screen, and that's how we show where we were. So very simple demo of getting the user's location and also turning that not only just into a latitude and longitude, but also turning that into a street address as well and displaying that on the screen.
So we're going to take a look at geofencing. So that's how you can customize your application based upon where a user is. Now, obviously, you might not have your application always running, so we're going to take a look at how you can run this task in the background. Now, one of the things that you'll probably notice here is that we're using the emulator to do this because that saves me from running round and round Reading whilst Mike is showing you what the code is doing.
Okay, so let's switch again. I think we'll run this first on the emulator and then we'll talk about the code. Yeah. Again, this is a Windows 10 Universal Windows application. Okay, so what we've set up here in the emulator, which is one of the reasons why it's really handy, is we're simulating our location. So we're here on the Microsoft campus in Reading, and we've set up a little route that the emulator is going to go on a little journey across these push pins. It starts here, and point 12 is here because that's the end of the journey, and it's going to spend 10 seconds at each of these push pins. So let's go over to the emulator here. Let's register our geofence, and what that's doing is registering a 1 kilometer geofence around this location, and let's set the emulator off on this trip. So what should be happening here is that when the emulator spends a certain amount of time outside of that geofenced area, we should get a notification. And when it comes back into that geofenced area, we should get a notification. So we might get one early on here to say, oh, I've noticed that that's actually where the journey has started. We started off inside of the geofence. It wouldn't surprise me if we got an event through in a second saying that. It's worth saying as well, you know, what sort of things these geofences are useful for. Things like, you know, we see these with automatic heating systems. When I'm a certain distance from my house, you could turn the heating on, the central heating, or something like that. It's a sort of scenario you might use that for.
Yeah, or any sort of reminder to do with when you're close to a particular shop or a type of store, saying remind you to purchase this particular thing. Maybe if I go past the park, it says, hey, walk the dog, remember the dog's in the boot of the car.
Remember the dog.
The sort of things that I do need reminders for in my life.
Yeah, so we're on our journey, and we've probably been outside of the geofenced area now for a reasonable little period of time, so I'd expect that round about this point, we would start to see an event coming through saying you have exited the geofenced area, and some kind of coordinates as to when we did that. And so we just see, we're almost on the home straight here and heading home. And so let's just see whether that comes through. Head back towards the business park, and we're back where we started. And you'll notice that the geofencing support here, it doesn't just deliver events as they happen. It does a thing called coalescing. So again, this is all about being conscious of battery life and so on. It doesn't necessarily ping you the very nanosecond that you left the area. It's more building a picture over time and trying to be smart about when it delivers events into your code. But you'll see that we got some entrance events here. At a particular time, we exited the geofenced area. And I wouldn't be amazed if another event came through in a second to say, we've gone back into the geofenced area. So we're getting this information through from the SDK and the sensors telling us, you know, what's going on as the user's doing this. And it's very important to realize that we don't actually have to run this app on the phone for this to happen. We're also supporting doing this in the background, so we could repeat this process and shut this app down, and it would still be getting the events that it's been getting so far. So hey, let's drop into some code and see how you'd put this sort of thing together. Yeah. Let's just shut down the Visual Studio and the emulator for a minute. And so essentially the way this works, I'm not going through all the code in this example because some of it is about just building up a log file of where you've been. It's not very interesting. But essentially when you click that button on the screen, first thing to say, this is UWP. We don't have any additional references in the project beyond the UWP. And in our application manifest over here, you'll notice just a couple of things. Request access to location again, and we've also made a declaration for a location-based background task. So we're going to do background work here. You don't have to run the application in order for me to track your progress around Reading while you're driving around there. So that's a good thing. Let's go back over into our code. I wrote a little helper function that we're going to drop into right now, registering a geofence for us. And the 1,000 here means 1 kilometer. Geofencing has, which states do you care about? Do you care when they enter the fence, or do you care when they leave the fence, or both? And we're saying here we care about both. And there's also this notion of dwell time. How long do they have to be inside or outside the fence for you to care? We've set this to 15 seconds. I think that's incredibly low. I think in the real world it would be, hey, you know, maybe 10 minutes or half an hour or something in order to switch my heating on and off. I don't think I'd want it to be happening on a per second boundary. That's not really what I want. But we're just doing a demo, so we made it low. Let's jump into this function. I'm just going to hit F12 and jump in. This calls an internal function. We're going to hit F12 and jump in. And so here's the crux of things here. So the first thing we do is going to do background work. So whenever you do background work, you should request the permission to do it. The user can switch it on or off. So if we actually have the permission to use background work, we do two things. We register a geofence and we register a background task. Let's take a look at registering the geofence. We're going to hit F12 and it's just down there on the screen anyway. It's just there. So look at what we do. We do what we did in the last example. Where are we? So we go off and figure out, where am I right now? Get the geolocation. And then we come along and this is me just clearing up any previous geofences that I've already registered, just in case I needed to do that. But fundamentally, we create a new geofence. We're putting an identifier on it, so we just got a name for it. We create a geocircle, so I think we only support circular geofences. I think they have to be, it can't be some weird polygon, it has to be a circle, I think. At the current location with the current radius, so 1 kilometer around the current location. Which states do we want entered and exit? False says, I want this to repeat. I don't just want to do it once, I want to do it again and again. How long we want to stay for, and we add that to this class called geofence monitor in the SDK, fences.add. So now we've told the system about our geofence. The next question is, do you want to watch that in the foreground or do you want to watch it in the background? We want to watch it in the background. So let's jump back to the calling code, jump back twice. Here's the calling code, 1 second. Okay, so we said we do two things. We register the fence, we've done that already. Then we register our background task. So let's jump to that with F12 again. And you'll notice this is standard code for registering a background task. It looks like I asked twice if we've got access to background tasks, just to be doubly sure. I don't know what that's doing there. Maybe that needs to come out. And we use the background task builder as you would always do. And the only trick here is we're using a location trigger, and it's of type geofence. So there's a special trigger type for geofencing. That sets up our background task, which is in this separate project here, to run anytime we see some of these geofencing events. And just very quickly, if I show you what that task looks like, here's our background task, here's its run method. And the important thing about this is that when it occurs, you can go back to that geofence monitor class, and there's this method called readReports. And readReports is saying, tell me about the geofencing stuff that's happened since I last talked to you. And that's that idea of coalescing. It's not just one event, you might get a few. Oh, they entered here, but they left there. And they might put a few together to save battery life and so on. And that's really what's happening. And really, I probably won't talk much more about this other than say this is the key method. If we go and have a look at what a change report looks like, hit F12, you'll see it says, this is the geofence, this is the position, and this is the new state. And geofence states are, very simply, entered or exited, or in some circumstances, you also need to deal with fences being removed. So, without digging into this logging code here, fundamentally, what are we saying? You can set up a geofence, you can set up a background task. When your geofence states are entered or exited, we'll run your background task and we'll say, hey, if you would just call read reports, we will tell you what's been going on. And it's as simple as that, really.
Now, you've hard-coded some things into there, such as the dwell time within that fence and also that 1 kilometer boundary. Yes. So that could be 10. How far can that go down to?
I don't know what the minimum size is of a geofence. It'd be in the SDK docs off the top of my head. But I think you can go, it's certainly specified in meters. So, you know, I think you can get it down. It's not specified in centimeters, so they don't go that far. But I think you can get down into meters.
But again, I mean, there's going to be performance issues or concerns you're going to have to consider within that. So whilst you can get that precise, you've just got to think about the context of how you're actually going to be using this.
Yes, and you know, and you can set up multiple geofences and so on, and you could try and track, you know, activity as somebody sort of moves between cells. So it's kind of up to you, but you've got to think you're running on the user's device, and obviously it's pay for play. So anytime you add more of this stuff, your user, you might be improving their experience one way, but you might be burning their battery in another way. So just be a bit cautious about that kind of thing.
Brings up some interesting situations there.
Yeah, so let's have a look at some more demos around some of these sensors and what else we can do. Okay, so that was two examples of location. Let's switch to look at different kinds of sensors, and there's tons of them on the phone. So we picked just one here. We're going to look at the compass, but we're going to use that to make a general point about how you access lots of these different kinds of sensors. So here we are back in Visual Studio again. And once again, I'm going to debug the application first on my device just to show you what this does. Let's deploy down to the phone. And the application should be deploying down to the phone. Very simple thing. It's a compass style display. It has two needles on here, one for magnetic north and one for true north. And that's it. That's all the application does. It just displays that output on the phone. So let's debug that, stop debugging it rather, and come back over to Visual Studio. Again, this is just a classic Windows 10 universal Windows application. We've not got any additional SDKs or anything in here. And I just want to show you the pattern of how this works. If we jump into the code here, so what we do here is when the application loads up, now I put in a little comment here because essentially we're looking at the compass, but all of these sensors work the same way. So the code pattern that we've got here is going to work across sensors, which means we don't need to show all of them. And so what we do is we come along and we say compass.getDefault. So you could also say lightSensor.getDefault, and that will work as well. We're using the default one here. You can also write code that explicitly chooses if you had multiple sensors of a particular type, you could write that code. But we're not doing that. We're just saying, hey, give me the default compass. If you have one, and that's always going to be a good check because I don't think my PC has a compass in it. Then again, you're going to see this on all the different sensors, reporting interval. So what we're doing here is we're asking for the minimum reporting interval. How frequently does it update? Now, you wouldn't want to really do this for battery life reasons, but in this case, I've just set it to be as frequent as possible. And then again, this pattern is going to be across sensors. So the first thing we do is we say, what's your current reading? And we display that on the screen by changing a rotation transformation. But we also hook up to the reading changed event. And of course, when the reading comes through, the new reading, just bear with me one second, we go back and say, we'd like to display the new reading that's just come off the sensor. In this particular case with the compass, I did add a little bit of code that you could flick through here if you want. You're supposed to do some correction for the compass based on the orientation of the device. And that's going to be, there are other sensors that have that same situation as well. But, you know, that's dependent on the sensor type. The key point really here is get default, set the reporting interval, get the reading, and when the reading changes, update. And that's going to be true across all those different kind of sensors we got up there. Of course, the data that comes off them is going to be different, but that's true across all those different kind of sensors, kind of making it easy to handle all those different kind of sensors.
Okay, so they are quite low-level sensors that we were looking at there. And at the start, we mentioned that how can you customize an app experience based upon what someone's actually doing? So when we're taking a look at this next demo, it's about how can a phone actually infer whether someone's sitting still, whether they're walking around, whether they're driving, and we're going to take a look at how you can figure that out.
Yeah, so let's drop in again. We'll run it up first. And again, we're going to run this on the phone because it's much more of a mobile device than the PC. So let's run up this project first, and we'll talk about the code in a minute. We're going to use a particular sensor here called the activity sensor, which is a really cool thing. Let's just let that spin up onto my phone. And there's two things that we get in the UI that we're going to show here. It's just a simple UI, but there's a couple of things we're going to show. I'm going to show what you're currently doing. I'm going to show what you've been doing, and actually in this case it's going to be what I've been doing, which is probably mostly sitting in a chair. So let's see how this works out. Right, so down on the phone you'll see a couple of things. It says at the moment the phone is pretty much certain that I'm idle at the current time, and there's a last week of activity down here around what I've been doing. Sometimes I've been walking, sometimes I've been idle, and so on and so forth. So let's detach the debugger from this for a second. So I'm just going to detach the debugger so that the application keeps on running. And then let's pick up the phone and wander backwards and forwards a little bit. Shall I do this, or do you want to go for a walk?
You're really good at walking.
I'm good at walking. It's one of my top skills. So let's pick up the phone. And I'm just going to walk backwards and forwards around our little studio. We can't go too far, so let me go this way. And then I'm going to walk back maybe over this way. And what I'm hoping is that I'm just doing enough motion here just to get the application to think that I'm moving. And I don't know if I can go far enough. Can we fool it into thinking that we're actually going somewhere? And the answer may be...
I think you're cushioning too much of your movement by the way you're holding the phone.
I'm walking. And there we go, finally. It realizes that I've set up and walking. I can come back over to the podium. And ideally, in a moment or two, the application will realize that I have come back to being stationary and we're back sort of not doing anything again at the machine. There we go, we're back to idle. So let's take a look at how we do this. If we go over to our solution again, this is just a Windows 10 UWP application, no additional SDKs, but we have had to make one mention in the manifest. I'm going to show you this in the XML editor because I don't think there's a graphical thing for this. So just to point out that we have specified we want to use the activity capability here. So bear that in mind, because otherwise your code may not work. Let's drop into what the code looks like. It's important to realize that what we're showing you here only works in the foreground. We'll show you how to do this in the background in a moment. So what we do here is when the application loads, we come along and we get hold of the activity sensor. So this is similar to what we showed you around the compass. And if we've got one, we get hold of the current reading, which is similar to what we showed you on the compass. And if I just show you what this reading looks like, let's just hit an F12 here. Let's just hit an F12 there. And you'll see that a sensor reading includes an activity type and a confidence. And the activity type, if we jump to that, you get the idea of what you can do. I've yet to see how you actually trigger fidgeting, but apparently you can trigger fidgeting. I don't know how that works. Let's come back over to our code that we were looking at 1 second ago. So we get the current reading off the sensor. We display it with some graphics and so on. And then what we do is there's this notion of subscribing to particular activities. So you can walk up to the sensor here and say, what activities do you support? And in my case, I'm saying for any of the activities you support, I would like to subscribe. I'm interested in all of them. You might only be interested in walking, in which case don't subscribe to the other activities. And then what we do is we say, okay, tell me when the reading changes. Pretty simple, like the compass. And of course, down here somewhere, when the reading changes, we just display the new reading. So that's pretty simple. Now, the last thing that we were doing, which is another interesting thing here, is if we just go back up to our code up here, you can also walk up to this class and say, give me the system history. Tell me what's been going on while I wasn't watching. So that's kind of interesting. And you give it a time span, and I'm saying for the last week. And then that just gives you a list of these readings for the last week. So it's building up that log as well. By the way, it's worth saying there are settings in the phone, of course, to turn this on and off for the user. You can't track them if the user doesn't want you to. But you know, you get an idea there of how we can track what the user's doing, what the current activity is, and also go back into the log and see what they've been doing for the previous some time period that's really with your control.
Yeah. Interesting as well. So for instance, if you're, am I driving, speak to me? So you can start to customize your UIs in that sort of way.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll look at how we can do some more of this in the background in the follow-on demo. Okay, so if you're looking at that last demo, you might think, well, hang on a minute, because what user is going to run your app all the time just so that you can track their activity and display it on the screen? Now, there was a historical view, but you'd really want to be able to do this kind of work in the background rather than taking some sort of solution of, you know, trying to get your app to run all the time through extended execution or something like that. Much better to work in the background. And you can do this kind of work with sensors in the background. So let's take a quick look at that. Once again, let's run up an application onto the phone. So I'm just going to debug this down onto the phone. Let's set that going. And this is a very kind of simple UI that we're going to display here. It's really about taking two kinds of sensor data. So the activity sensor we just talked about, and also I chose the proximity sensor because it's a simple one. And we're just going to take that activity, watch it in the background, and log it to a file. And that's kind of all we're going to do. So we got this down on the phone now. So the application's spinning up on the phone. And you'll notice that I'm just going to clear the log file here because it's already seeing things coming through. So the application does work in the foreground, but let's clear this log file. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop debugging the application. So we'll stop it. And so the application's no longer running on the phone. And on the phone, a proximity sensor is a very simple thing. There's just something that knows if the phone is close to your face. Other devices have more complex proximity sensors. But what we're going to do is just wave our hand across the phone a few times. So let's do a quick sort of wave over the phone, and maybe another wave over the phone, and maybe another wave over the phone. Now, if my code is doing the right thing in the background, when we go back into that application, which will just spark up again from Visual Studio, and you can see a bunch of events have been logged while we're away from the application. So this stuff is happening in the background. We don't have to have the code running. Let's take a quick look at how we put that together. So once again, let's stop debugging. And let's have a look at our solution. This is just a Windows 10 UWP application. It's two projects. There's a foreground app and a background Windows runtime component. That's what you always have to do today for background tasks. There's no additional, there's no additional SDKs referenced here other than the library project there itself. And in the manifest, if we take a look at our manifest, again, I think it's probably best to show you this in the XML editor just to make sure we see everything. So let's open that up in the XML editor. And you'll see that what we've done is a couple of things. We've got a background task implemented here. We're talking about using location and we're using activity. So we talked about that in our previous demo. Let's jump into the code and have a look at how that looks. Let's go straight over there. So I made this application quite simple. When it loads up, what it does is, again, we should always request access whenever we're trying to do background work, and so we do request access. And then we do a couple of things. We register a proximity task and we register an activity task. Let's take a look at the first one first. Hit F12 to jump to that function. So here's something we didn't do on some of the previous sensors. There is no proximity sensor.getDefault. So we're having to go and find it ourselves, which is kind of not too difficult. So we go off and say, hey, find me all the proximity sensors. We see if we can get one. And then we get hold of an ID from it. That gives us a device info with an ID. And we get the proximity sensor from that ID. That gives us a sensor. And then here's again a pattern that applies across all the different kinds of sensors. You can use for background tasks a special kind of trigger, a sensor data threshold trigger. So hey, in the background, I guess if my background atmospheric pressure goes over some value, I want to know, but I don't want to know about all the values, just if we go over that value. And so you can provide a threshold here to say when this sensor hits this threshold, I'm interested. Now, actually, for a proximity sensor, there really isn't a threshold. It's just kind of on and off. So it's a bit sort of dummy here. But this pattern of building up getting a threshold from the sensor and then handing it to a sensor data threshold trigger is common. And then once we've got that trigger, we wrote a common routine here to just register a background task. So if we jump to this very quickly, you'll see it's boilerplate code using the background task builder, giving the task a name, an entry point, setting up the trigger and registering it. Let's jump back a couple of steps. So that was registering the proximity sensor task. Let's have a look at registering the activity task. Let's hit F12 on this as well. So if you remember, we used the activity sensor in the previous demo. This time around, we're using an activity sensor trigger, a trigger for a background task. You can specify a minimum reporting interval. So I don't want to report more than once a second. That again, that's probably extreme. I'd probably set something more realistic for the real world. And once again, like we showed in the previous demo, for this background invocation, what we do is we specify what kind of activities we're interested in. So in this case, I'm saying I'm only interested in walking and idle. For each of those activities, we make sure that the trigger supports the activity before we tell it that we want to subscribe to that activity. And then finally, we create another background task using the same routine I just showed you with a different name and a different trigger. So those are going to cause us to need a background task over here. We jump into our library and have a look at our background task. You'll see, hey, it's a background task like all the others you get on UWP. When it runs, we come along and we say, okay, is it the activity sensor? Because if it is, there's some reports I can read. And notice how this looks like what we did with geofencing. You get a bunch of reports and I just log them to a file. You get the confidence, the date and time. Sorry, you get the confidence and you get the activity itself. And then we say, if it's not one of those, maybe it's a sensor data threshold trigger. If it is, get me the details. And in this case, we just log the fact that something happened because it doesn't come with any additional data to tell us what's going on with the proximity sensor. So we just kind of log it. And that's it. So that's kind of how two different kinds of sensors, but how we can have this notion of watching sensors in the background to see what's going on. You don't have to have the application running in the foreground. You don't have to have it on the screen. You don't have to use extended execution to artificially prolong the lifetime of your application. You can just use background triggers off sensors and off the activity sensor. It just kind of does the right thing for you. It's pretty cool. Yeah, so now hopefully that shows you how that stuff comes together. Okay, so this is that part of the show where we take a look at some things that may have got glossed over as we're going along, or some extra pointers and those kinds of things to have a look at. I made a list, as I always do, in my terrible handwriting here in my note-taking app. Let's just run through a few things. I know some of these things are your things on here as well. So there was one I did talk about as we went along. When we were working with the activity sensor, there's a couple of things I just want to mention. It's the top of this list and towards the bottom of the list. The activity sensor is really cool because it gives you that walking, cycling thing. You do need to make sure that you put into your manifest, your application manifest, that you want to do that. So just to show you again, if we switch back to Visual Studio and jump into a manifest here, here's this app saying it wants to do activity. There's no UI for this, so you can fumble around for a while thinking, maybe there's some permission I need. You won't see it in the UI, so be aware of it. And the other thing I'd say is that the activity sensor was unlike any of the other sensors in that you have to go through this strange, well, it's not strange, but it's just different. Here we are, for instance, using the activity sensor trigger, and we walk up to it and say, do you support walking? Do you support cycling? Do you support stationary? And then it says, yes, I do. And we say, okay, then subscribe. I'm interested in walking and cycling and being stationary. And I must admit, when I first wrote this code, I waited a long time for events to show up. And then I thought, maybe I'm supposed to subscribe. And then once you start subscribing, you get a stream of events and you're good. So be aware of those two things. That's something I would talk about.
Emulator tools, I mean, since the very early days, the emulator's actually been really strong, especially when it comes to things such as figuring out where you are on a map. So rather than having to actually go out and take your phone and carry it around, try and capture that data live and bring it back, just think there's a ton of tools built within that emulator that you can use when it comes to subscribing to any of these sensors that we've got in there.
Yeah, and it's worth reading the docs and understanding what the different modes mean and how it works. And you can simulate other things in the emulator, like push notifications and all kinds of things. It's a generally useful tool. Yeah. Of course, at some point, you will have to physically go out with a device and see if it actually works.
Yeah, don't let it replace actually going out there with a real device, as many devices as you can. And we touched on this a couple of times around battery life. Yes, you can customize the number of times you will ping some of these services and the amount of data you will get back and how and the frequency around those sorts of things. Just think about the end result that might have for the user on their battery and the value they're getting out of you doing that. So there's always a payoff there. Is it how important is it to the actual functionality of the application as opposed to the value that the user's going to get from it. So just consider those things.
I think as a developer, you're always kind of, hey, I can get this data, you know, this on a per millisecond basis, therefore I should get this data on a per millisecond basis, and it's not always the best idea. I suppose these days we think about that more because we're so used to mobile devices and battery lives and so on. There's a couple of other things I wanted to mention. We wrote a few, first, point number four there. I mentioned this somewhere along the line. It's worth remembering that with Windows UWP apps, you do have this notion of extended execution. So you can walk up to the system and say, I would like to be extended. And depending on the power and the battery and all those kinds of things, Windows can come back to you and say, okay, we are not going to suspend or shut down your app, go for it. Now there are scenarios where that makes sense, where you want to do that over and above what you can do with background tasks. So I think just to flag that it's there, it's not common. It's the edge case, but you can do it if you need to. Once you've decided that foreground and background are not doing enough for you, you might think about that. And also, speaking of background, because we wrote a few background tasks in here, and I think since day one with UWP and WinRT, people have felt that background tasks were a bit painful. You have to write a separate WinRT component. You have to make sure it's listed in the right file and all that stuff. People have probably got into it by now, but it can be a bit tedious. It's worth knowing that in the anniversary edition of Windows 10, which is coming out real soon at the time we're recording this, you can have this thing now called a single process execution model. One process that can have your background tasks in as well. So you don't have to make a separate project. You don't have to make a separate component. It's a lot easier than it was before. So that's getting improved. So if you sometimes think that looks a bit tedious, we're improving that too. And then I'd like to just look at point seven, but I'm not quite sure what it says.
I think it's meant to say confidence.
Ah, right. Okay, I wasn't sure. Okay.
So as with some of these services, you get a confidence rating. So as in the service will say, how confident are you that I'm 99% confident this person's walking. I suppose it's up to you to think about, well, how confident am I as the developer, as the designer of this solution, that what I'm into adding to it is actually going to be useful for the user as well. So I think whilst we supply a level of confidence, you also have to be sure that it's going to add value yourselves to them.
I mean, it's quite an interesting thing, isn't it, where initially when you get a device that knows you're walking, you think this is really clever, it knows I'm walking. But then you very quickly get to the point of where the device tells you you're walking when you're not. And then you become quite angry with the stupid device that thinks I'm walking when I'm not. So you've got to walk that line all the time, really, between this kind of stuff. Cool, okay, so let's have a look at a few links for the technologies that we talked about in the show. Okay, so we've just got a few links for you on this show, because most of what we did was in Windows 10 and the UWP, and it was in the core platform. So as always, if you want to look at that stuff, you just need to go to dev.windows.com and see the Developer Center for Windows 10. Everything's hanging off there. I also would highlight this really nice section of MSDN for this article, Integrating Devices, Printers, and Sensors. That's a really nice article worth having a look at. There's some great information in there that gives you some of the pros and cons about how to work with sensors and what you should be doing and those kinds of things. And of course, as for every show, if you want to get the code, then the code for everything that we do on the show is all in our GitHub repository. You can just go and clone that thing down, have a look at what we've been doing, and give us feedback on that stuff and come back to us. So those are the three links that I'd really highlight from the show.
Great stuff. So thanks again for watching. And as always, get in contact on Twitter or in the comments below. Click the stars above and let us know what you think of the show. Until next time.